Welcome to the Film Only Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:08 British Summer Time. Today is July 16th, and of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week. And today's action in particular is rather pivotal. Reviewing what's happened over the last 6 weeks, there was a sharp sell-off into the end of June and the beginning of July, then a sharp short covering rally over the last 10 days to 2 weeks. And today's downward dynamics are the first downward dynamics during following that short covering rally. And for a number of indices, not least Wall Street, they're occurring at the lower side of 200-day moving averages. Some of the weaker markets had broken down from medium-term top formations, broken down below their 200-day moving averages, steadied, rallied back up to those 200-day moving averages, and are now encountering resistance. For markets such as Spain, the bears will be saying that this is just an equal-sized distribution before the market goes lower. The bulls will be saying that it's already had a big enough decline, but in terms of the chart action, today's downward dynamics simply can't be ignored. They are too large and occurring in areas of obvious potential resistance. So, if the bullish case is going to be sustained, then they will have to find support above or in the region of the early July lows. And it really is for the bulls to prove at this juncture. However, we can classify the global stock market at present as two-tier because we can split them almost down the middle, where you have those that have broken down, broken their progressions of higher reaction lows, broken below their 200-day moving averages, and looking decidedly weak. And then you have those that have sustained their progressions of higher reaction lows, held above their 200-day moving averages, found support repeatedly at those levels. And those markets are primarily in Asia and Latin America, although Northern Europe, such as Germany or Sweden or Denmark, also have those characteristics. So we are very much in a two-tier world. And in the West, there has been a massive concentration of commentary on the deflationary threat that is being manifested in the USA and in the periphery of Europe, and indeed much of the Eurozone, the UK and Japan. And there has been a lot of people worrying about that. That has certainly helped to push government bond prices for US Treasuries, gilts, bunds, JGBs up to impressive highs. But they're discounting a worst-case scenario. We've had the same move in government bond prices for a number of emerging markets, particularly those in Asia, for completely different reasons. In those countries, people are chasing, they're attempting to lock in high yields in the case of Indonesia, where following already a very large move, the yield is still at 8% in a strong currency like the rupiah. Or people are locking in the fact that these government bonds show a relative attractiveness compared to the fiscal positions that are evident in the periphery of Europe in particular and in the USA. And demand for those bonds is probably much more because people are trying to lock in relatively secure investments rather than the safe haven that people are terrified of what's going to happen to stock markets if we do have a double dip recession, which is primarily what's helping to drive the demand for US Treasuries, gilts, Eurobonds, JGBs, etc. This week also saw the precious metals rally in the early part of the week, and they were weak in here today, with gold falling back below $1,200, platinum pulled back to test the $1,500 level, Silver backed away from the 1840 level and closed out at 1786, and palladium pulled back below $450. Particularly when you look at platinum and palladium, which had these massive moves in the early part of the year, they have also pulled back. They are back below their 200-day moving averages, to the best of my knowledge. And they're showing the same kinds of characteristics that are evident in some of the weaker stock markets. So the environment is increasingly looking like a risk-off type of environment where we have a rally in the or safe haven type assets such as US Treasuries. The yen has also strengthened really quite considerably in here, and it was stronger against the dollar by 67 ticks in here today, and that's providing a headwind in no uncertain terms for the Japanese stock market when the Nikkei was down by 2.86% in here today and isn't reacting at all well to the strength of the yen and the complete absence of leadership from the political classes. And that's the strength of the yen has been a continual headwind for the Japanese economy, which we've pointed out on a number of occasions. In the industrial metal complex, it's also under pressure, and just about all of the industrial metals are back below their 200-day moving averages, except for tin, which remains the leader in the sector. The agricultural commodities this week were a bit stronger, and particularly the wheat market, which has been rallying right back up to the upper side of the base. Because these grains and beans have been basing for more than a year, they really do need to be looked at on a weekly chart. And although they have rallied really very impressively over the last couple of weeks, they're coming back up now to the upper sides of these more than year-long base formations. They're overbought in the short term, so they will have to break out and sustain upward breaks to really indicate that demand is regaining the upper hand. But the fact that they have rallied so far has also been a boost to some of the agricultural chemical companies. Agrium in particular has had a very strong day. I think Monsanto was one of the better performers on the S&P in here today, and these Potash Corp of Saskatchewan, Mosaic, Agrium, they've had rather abrupt declines over the last 6 weeks or so and do appear to be finding support and are certainly getting a boost from the impressive move that we've seen in the grain and bean complex. Elsewhere, the sugar price continues to recover in here, and although it was a little bit weaker in here today, particularly that US traded contract has a short-term progression of higher reaction lows underneath it. The coffee market was relatively quiet in here today, but it has been very strong over the last couple of weeks and is right up there in close to its recovery highs. And the cocoa market has been very firm as well, particularly that London traded contract. On the daily chart, you'll see a big move where there's been a contract change. But on the front month, or the most active contract, I think is September now, it's really right up there at its highs. So we're seeing that the agricultural sector, at least bits of it, have been really very firm indeed. And the other, I spoke about the two-tier nature of the stock market out there. We've had a number of markets this week breaking upwards to new recovery highs in Asia, not least Thailand and the Philippines, but Korea is also very close to the upper side of its range if it hasn't already sustained an upward break. India has also been very strong. Indonesia and Malaysia have been very firm. And in Latin America, both Colombia and Chile have sustained moves to new all-time highs. So it is very much a two-tier world. And I think it would probably be unreasonable to expect some of these leading markets to be completely immune from selling pressure on Wall Street in particular. However, if Wall Street does manage to find support at the early July lows, then that isn't going to offer much of a headwind for some of these Asian markets. And these Asian markets are not worried about deflation, far from it. Inflation and overheating are probably more of a worry for them. Obviously, if economic growth slows down and the recovery loses momentum in the USA and Europe, that's going to have a knock-on effect in Asia. And you may not get, well, we've seen a lot of these markets raising interest rates over the last couple of weeks, some of them from historically very low levels. If we see growth slowing down in the rest of the world, then they're not going to be tightening the way that one might expect. And that could suggest that we're going to have looser monetary conditions for a longer period of time, which will be broadly supportive of markets that are receptive to international capital and have the conditions for growth. And that's certainly true of Asia and Latin America. And they're backed up by the major theme that will likely to continue to dominate over the next decade, and that's the greatest urbanization in history, because unprecedented numbers of people are being lifted out of poverty right across the population centers of the world. They're building the infrastructure, they're building the schools, and the number of young people entering the workforce over the coming decades and entering their most productive years is really unprecedented. The world has simply never seen this number of people entering the global economy, which means that it's going to be a lot more competitive. But these young people will be ambitious and they will work hard for the standard of living that we take for granted in the West. And that is the theme that is likely to drive investment markets for the next decade and counting, because they're going to want all the accoutrements of the middle classes that they see that lots of other people have. So demand for just about everything that is consumer driven is likely to continue to advance over the next decade and counting. It means that globally important companies with recognizable brands capable of marketing to the new middle classes are reasonably firm bets for the long term. And although the economies of Europe and indeed the US remain under pressure and may take longer to recover, that doesn't mean that there aren't very strong companies in those countries that have the global brands, have the exposure to the emerging markets, and are leveraged to growth in those markets. And they are likely to continue to outperform. So there are a number of different ways to benefit from this long-term investment theme, both at home and abroad, and there are going to be really quite impressive opportunities. If we see that some of the bigger markets pull back from their 200-day moving averages and fail to find support in the region of their July lows and break down once more, then we can anticipate that sentiment is going to deteriorate really very, very fast indeed. And it also means that some of the better companies, even those that have the better earnings, that have strong dividends, have the exposure to the high growth markets of the world, will pull back even faster. So even if, as sentiment deteriorates, we're likely to be set up for the next really good buying opportunity. I met some some brokers in China who'd been on visits as tourists to India, and had been the thing that had struck them most had been the poverty that they had seen. That was so evident in the cities, because you simply don't see people sleeping on the street in Beijing or Shanghai. But of course, there are reasons for that, being that you simply can't move around China as a poor person like you can in India. The hukou registration system means that rural people can't move into the cities, so you don't have concentrations of poor people in the cities. And a lot of people who've been to India come back with a very jaundiced view of the growth that's in the economy. But the growth that's there is really very real. And the way the country is run is completely different to China's authoritarianism. But it has remarkable numbers of successful entrepreneurs, and their companies dominate the Sensex. And it is the growth in those companies that has been reflected in the stock market, rather than the inequalities that are evident in the society, which one could hope will be ironed out over the next few decades. But India has been an outperformer and remains very much above its 200-day moving average, pressuring its highs, and a regional and indeed global outperformer, both in terms of GDP growth and stock market performance. And I think probably merits attention from just about any long-term investor. But the same is true of so many of these Asian countries, where you have large populations and large populations of young people entering the economy. And this is, I think, an inspiring story that is likely to drive investors for really a considerable period of time. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening and wish all the best to all of you.